time for the weekly update. Malcolm Honlein is with us, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, on this Friday morning, Erev Shabbos, here at JM in the AM. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you.
If I would have told you a week ago, with all the news, and you and I always talk about this, how much news there is every single week, but my gosh, the news cycle of the last week has included so many high-profile, incredible stories, and it doesn't seem to be ending, by the way. Let's start with now, and then we'll work our way backwards. What do you know about this Houthi drone attack in Tel Aviv today?
Well, we're learning more every hour as they uncover what may be, again, a human error, and will, I know, arouse a lot of anger and concern that it was seen. It was not unnoticed, it seems, but it was not seen as a hostile. I don't think they had seen something this size. It was the size of a small car and passed right over the American, former American embassy, now the American mission in Tel Aviv, the consulate. And I think very shortly we'll know much more about the cause of it. But coming on top of all the accusations, discriminations still from October 7th, this is going to arouse a lot of concern. And it just continues to undermine confidence when you can hit a building in Tel Aviv. Thank God, unfortunately, a person was killed and several wounded, but it could have been a much worse incident.
And when you say that, it sounds like what you're saying is that it was unclear what this was when it was spotted. And I guess we could add this to the list of incompetence that we have either witnessed or been told about this past week, right? I mean, is that what you're alluding to? That if somebody was on the ball, so to speak, they would have realized that this was a killer drone?
It's not, the size of it makes it impossible that it wasn't detected. The question is, were people alert? Was everybody working? Because clearly monitoring the coast of Israel is something that's going on 24/7. And again, they're acknowledging now that they did see it.
Right.
And the question, how it either evaded detection until it struck, or that there was a human error.
Right. They may have concluded that even though they saw it, they may have concluded it wasn't anything dangerous.
But also because, you know, there were multiple firings. The United States took down four UAVs, which were launched from Yemen towards Israel. And the it could have been that it while they were focused on the others, this one got through.
Right.
And it's not just Israel. I mean, it got through the Red Sea area, which is a long flight where you have both American and British and other ships, because they're looking for the attacks against the shipping in the Red Sea, and have repeatedly taken down rockets and drones aimed at Eilat.
Right.
This one aimed at Tel Aviv was followed the course.
Look, you know what I'm alluding to? Either during or after Shabbos, we all heard about the assassination attempt on the life of former President Trump. And as time goes by, and I think this morning, you know, really has solidified this, at least based on what I saw in the middle of the night in terms of the news stories, it might be a case of incompetence. That, you know, and not skill or preparedness, but literally incompetence that allowed this potential killer to have gotten through and to have set up the way he did with literally President Trump in his crosshairs. As you hear more and more about this story, is that the way it seems to you?
It certainly, there will be many people who will assess that today. I'm sure the media reports will vary. And then coming on top of the huge computer glitch,
right,
which of course will invite all sorts of conspiratorial theories. We don't know yet what really happened. I mean, they do say that the company that admits the glitch. But, you know, today, every incident invites instantly, before people have any of the facts, assessments and conspiracies and all sorts of things, which once they get out, you can't withdraw them. You can't take them back. I heard a high-ranking former American military guy who serves as a consultant on appearing on one of the major radio stations in New York that is very pro-Israel generally, and he started saying the threat that Iran had made against the president and about an attack, right. He said was really from the Israel lobby.
Meaning the accusation or the threat was from the Israel lobby?
That it was manufactured by Israel lobby. And while we have more than ample evidence, including statements in the last in the hours before, where an Iranian official said that this war is against Israel, not against the United States. You know, Israel is just the stepping stone to the real goal of attacking. And this was a very senior Hezbollah official who said Israel's merely a tool, the primary battle, the real war with America. And yet, here's a guy from the U.S. military, his name was McGinnis, I think, and he's saying that this is the Israel lobby. There's not a shred of evidence. But now that conspiracy theory gets onto the internet, gets a life of its own, and, you know, sometimes these theories prove to be right. But right now, it's all speculative. And unfortunately, we can't believe that in the age of computers and everything, that human error still plays a role. It does. And often, I mean, here in the case of the president and what happened in Butler, it's mind-boggling how much information they had, how many people saw him, how many people called the police, how many warnings there were. And yet he pointed his gun at a police officer who went down the steps. So I don't know whether he thought that he was a Secret Service guy or that he was there protecting the president. Whatever went on, there were so many aspects to it that would give rise to theories that, you know, there had to be complicity, there had to be, and it can be incompetence, it can be negligence. We have still a lot of questions to answer regarding October 7th, and I know that, you know, it's going to be very painful and it's going to be very difficult once those assessments and certain parts are coming out already. But people should be careful not to fall into the trap of some of the conspiratorialists and wait till you get the facts. And then there has to be accountability for it.
Right. All right. So I get it in terms of, you know, the source of a rumor like the Iran one. I understand that. And you're right. We have to be very careful about what to believe and what not to believe. But in terms of the threat itself, there is some sense to it, correct? I mean, the fact that the government of Iran or its intelligence services would want to eliminate President Trump actually makes sense, the way Trump has behaved toward Iran on the world stage, correct?
And Iran has assassinated people all over Europe, any opposition figure, anybody that they want to. And we will hear more because there are many people in Iran who are against the government who have leaked information and, again, have to discern the real and the fake, because it can be done deliberately to misguide people, to change the debate, to obfuscate the real source. I mean, there's a lot of aspects to it. But I think and often there are too many cover-ups. There's too much information that is not shared and that cases, and we see it even in minor instances or more minor, let's say in some of the anti-Semitic attacks and stuff, how they get buried in the bureaucracy with the 60, 70 investigations going on at the Department of Education, for instance, and hardly ever a result or a consequence for in the most part. They do individual cases, but they are the exception, I think, and the same thing is true in every aspect, that, you know, the number of cases that really get resolved, the number of incidents that get reported that appear to be threats and are really turn out to be nothing. So it's very complicated, and human nature is what it is. But we have to understand, Iran has executed people. This is not beyond them. They have many sleeper cells in the United States. We've talked about this for 20 years. We knew that they were coming in, and now with the open border, it's much worse. And the idea that somebody could even somehow switch this to the Israel to blame the Israel lobby for a rumor about Iran, when Iran threatens to do this all the time, they don't hide it.
Yeah, they, if they're going to blame the Israel lobby for something, they should choose something that's more believable.
Exactly.
In this case, nobody doubts that Iran, like I pointed out, and as you just affirmed, nobody doubts that Iran has a vendetta against President Trump. Were you one of those people, I'm just bouncing around the whole Washington thing for a moment, were you one of those people who from the beginning, when you first heard this rumor about Democratic leadership wanting to replace the president, at least, I mean, not immediately, but at least, you know, for the campaign, were you one of these people who felt that this is too complicated and it will create too much havoc in the party and the likelihood is he would remain on the ticket? Or are you one of those people who the moment, and I know some of these people, who the moment they heard the rumor said this is the road they're on and there's no doubt that in the November, someone else's name would be on the ballot?
Well, I could say I was of two minds, but probably was, but I was probably of 10 minds on this. I know the Bidens, and if you remember, I think I said it to you off air also about a year ago, that the most important person in Washington is Joe Biden, because she'll determine what he does.
Right.
And I still believe that the family and the people around him are determining it, and obviously, at some point, he as well will have to make the final decision to withdraw. I do believe he will. I think that the pressure within the party, one of the complications was that the hundreds of millions of dollars, by law, they're restricted on how they can transfer that fund. So it couldn't then, as people are now calling for an open convention and not predetermine who will be the candidate, that the money can only go to Kamala Harris. And then if not, they have to set up some complicated structure, I think, where, you know, like a PAC or something where he can give the money. But otherwise, under law, the money that they raised can only go to him, or in, if Kamala Harris is placed as in his, it takes his place.
Right.
The implications of it are still very great, even if it is Kamala Harris. You have started vice presidential search, and I think it would be very divisive. There are fears that the black vote will be angry if they bypass Kamala Harris, and I'm sure there are others who support her. I think there are a lot of people who don't feel that she's up to it and would relish a debate between Trump and Harris to do more than the Biden-Trump debate did. And, you know, there's a lot more at stake for many of the members, that the concern is over control of the House and Senate. Let's go beyond just the White House. And it's a very narrow margin now. So any major shift or any not-so-major shift could determine. And if Trump comes in there with a Republican House and a Republican Senate, that would be a whole new scenario. And many people always believe that the checks and balances, that it's good if you have a president of one party and Congress another, then they have to at least have some sense of compromise and you can't go just off on their own. We've seen the contrary too often. So the implications are so immense, and nobody has to be told. And Trump, you know, while he's right now on a high, and I think after Butler clearly, you know, was considered a shoo-in and after the debate. But you see also the reaction to the speech last night, the criticisms, the right. The things. So there's no surety at this point.
No, we get that. There's a long time between now and November, even though you're right. Last Saturday night, most pundits were assuming he had it in the bag. All right, let's do a little bit of the RNC. First of all, those of us who, you know, care a lot about Israel always are wary of those who are politically isolationists. Not that they have a right to be so, but it sometimes it worries us in terms of American support for Israel. What did you think of the choice of President Trump as he chose J.D. Vance to be his vice presidential candidate?
Well, I think that generally people would have thought of other people first. He's not that well known, and there were some concerns, and there was somebody who opposed President Trump very vocally. But it, on the issues that we consider first, of course, the relationship between the United States and Israel and U.S. defense and all those issues, he seems to have a very good track record. And, you know, he's young. Hopefully he'll be attractive to people, and certainly in the Rust Belt states, the Midwest, where he can, people can relate to him. He has a personally a strong story. So I think, you know, President Trump was checking boxes, and that in many respects, he checked the most boxes. The I know there were a lot of people who thought that Rubio was really would have made brought more Hispanic votes. You know, it's a question of analysis. I think the bottom line, though, is that Trump makes the decisions based on his own judgment, and that whether it was an inspired choice or not, we'll see in the campaign. But he certainly made a good impression in his speech.
It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio around the world, the web at NahumSiegel.com, on the Nahum Siegel Network, and, of course, on the beloved NSN app. Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. We call this the weekly update. More from the RNC. One from somebody, anybody from our community has to be very happy at the number of mentions of the hostages, including, by the way, in President Trump's speech last night, and the hostage families themselves who appeared, and in general, those who were given the opportunity to really exhibit support for Israel from the podium. I don't know if I'm missing anything else, but yeah, I think you have to say that the RNC essentially made it quite comfortable for a pro-Israel person to be there.
I think you have to go beyond that. I think the speech by Shabbos Kestenbaum, but and even more Matt Brooks of the Republican Jewish Coalition, who got up and just started off and said something to do you support Israel, or we stand with Israel, and the crowd cheered and he did, and it was really a huge response from the crowd. And he said that you couldn't do this at Democratic convention, or he's booed off. And I don't know if that's true, but I do know that the response is one that you probably would not have heard anywhere else. It was really thunderous response, and there were references made by other speakers, not in prime time, to Israel. I thought the president would do more on foreign policy in his remarks, but he did make the reference to the hostage families, and the fact that you had the Nutra family there speaking in an important slot, I thought was significant. So it was really a bid. And if you looked at when the TV spanned the audience, you saw that there were identifiable Jews and people with signs that we are Jews for Trump, that it certainly was probably a comfortable place. They even had kosher food available, I understand. Chabad and others provided. There were events, some events, for Jewish leaders and leaders, representatives of the community or members of the community to participate. So the people I spoke to were very upbeat. I'm sure the Democratic convention, you will have some of this, but right now it's going to be overshadowed by the presidential selection and issue. I mean, I don't think it's completely final, but it could be this weekend, which will give them enough time to, some time to begin the search process. I think people do not want a coronation of the vice president, but it'll be very hard to bypass her.
On the other thing, for a moment, the mention of the hostages, I could see President Biden, if he does end up speaking as the nominee at the DNC, I could see him making a statement like President Trump did. You know, you have a finite amount of time to release the hostages. I just don't think he's taken seriously on the issue. When Trump says it, it's reminiscent of the hostage situation with Reagan and how they were released, of course, moments after Reagan was inaugurated. I don't know if the same thing would happen in this case. You're dealing with a completely different entity, meaning Hamas versus an actual government. But I think that I'd have to assume that the enemy would take the words that he said and the way he said it more seriously. Is that fair?
I think you can come to the conclusion and to the strength of his declaration. The problem is it got lost because the speech was long, and I think, you know, people were looking for every hint and things in the speech. But it was really, I think, him
coming to terms with what happened last Saturday night, and certainly his tone was more muted than it was in the past, which I think is good and adds to enable more substance in the debate, which generally has been lacking. We haven't seen real intense discussion yet of the issues, but the except for the high-profile ones.
Right.
But I do think that the Iranians would be concerned, given what the president did in the past and what the Republicans will do if they have more majority, to cut off all the funds, to really impose the sanctions, to stop the oil exports, is the funding. Because if we stop Iran, we stop their ability, or limit their ability to fund their network of the Ring of Fire, which now even targets Ahmad Jordan. And by the way, this week, a very strange announcement that got little coverage is that they're opening NATO headquarters in Ahmad Jordan, which is, it's a thing, but it's a declaration. It's against the Iranian designs, because getting control of Jordan would bring them up to the border of Israel and change again the strategic situation. But we've seen how the Ring of Fire from Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, and of course Gaza, as well as other growing ties that they have, pose a different situation, and the geopolitical and strategic situation is changing. And therefore, we need to see a United States leading Europe, getting things really on the record, where we punish those people responsible, we punish the governments responsible, we support the people in Iran who want to get rid of this regime, we really crush the Houthis once and for all, the attacks that are continuing against shipping in the Red Sea. It's intolerable. It's costing everybody money, it's costing lives, it's posing a more and more extreme danger, and it only encourages them. If that they can get away with these things, then others will continue to do it. And we know how important the control over the Red Sea is, and it's 60% of the oil coming to the West Coast through the Red Sea. The fact that Suez Canal is very close down, these all have broad implications, and as well as that the price of goods that we pay for goes up significantly because the ships have to go all the way around Africa. So the credibility of the threat, but it also means that we have to be prepared to execute on that threat. And we have to say that the fact that we have an aircraft carrier off the coast of Lebanon again, and the capacity to, and the CENTCOM has really been very remarkable in its support, both verbal and demonstrated, of Israel, is important. And it's something that obviously the enemies of Israel read. So this is, it's a really a moment of grateful joy, and that the combination of all of the challenges and threats, the increased cyber ability to attack, and I'm not saying that today's attack yet has been proven to be...
You're not saying it's an attack. Today you're not saying it's an attack, right?
We don't know that it's attack again. It could be just human failure or failure of equipment, but it's, the implications of it, that planes all around the world are being stopped, that, you understand how cyber warfare can cripple a country as much as an atomic weapon.
Yeah, banks, media outlets, hospitals, and more. Speaking of the Democratic Party and its news this coming week, likely overshadowing other news, is Prime Minister Netanyahu still scheduled to speak in Washington on Wednesday?
Yes, he is still scheduled to speak on Wednesday. Speaker Johnson addressed the threat to disrupt and said that anybody who does will be arrested. Wow. I do think there will be a protest, that people will not show up. There could be people in the audience, that's the Congress people, give their tickets to somebody or some people who will disrupt. It's happened. It happened the last time he spoke to the joint session of Congress. I can tell you the tickets are in great demand. So it's not because it's not an unpopular speech. It's people want to get there, and they're scrounging around for tickets. The families of the hostages, many of them coming and want to attend. So the speech is scheduled to go on. He was scheduled to meet with President Biden. We don't know when he will come back, because of COVID. So there was an announcement that he will meet Vice President Harris. And I assume that while he's here, he will either meet or speak to former President Trump. And I'm sure he'll have some meetings with members of Congress. Right now, if he arrives on Monday, Tuesday is a fast day. So I think they will limit the public activities, though he will continue, obviously. And Wednesday will be the speech to Congress. There's also in the morning a memorial to Joe Lieberman, Senator Lieberman, in Washington, which will be attended by many prominent people. I think the president was even considering coming to it. I guess that will not happen now. But so the prime minister, when I spoke to him in Israel, he was saying that he was coming back Wednesday night. Now I heard he may stay till Thursday, but again, it's
now that he has his own plane, he can make his own schedule.
We all want to get a ride on Wings of Eagles or.
Wasn't it Zion Sunday? I forgot already. I criticized the name, but I forgot the name.
Not Wings of Eagles or.
Maybe
Eagles
it was Wing of Eagle or something. I know, but there was some problem with it grammatically. With that in mind, that he's going to be speaking to and maybe appealing members of Congress on Wednesday, is the rumor or the news story true or not that the IDF is running low on critical resources?
So there are many different versions of some of this I can't discuss that I know, and I know a limited amount, and the real facts are not discussed publicly. But is there a concern about it that you hear from military people? Yes. Are shipments still being held up or delayed? The answer is yes. Now the president ordered the release of the 500-pound bombs, but there are many, many other items. And because there are very limited sources for this stuff, you know, a lot of the prepositioned material in Israel, about $1 billion worth of stuff, which was, you know, in the Negev, available for America. And if Israel in time of war was completely depleted and sent to Ukraine and not replaced, but also just a lot of the equipment that needs to be refurbished. You need parts for tanks. These are things that you can't just go on a shelf and buy some of the things that they need. And there were very strange revelations this week about the shortage of tanks. People have seen it in Israel, say there doesn't appear to be a shortage, but they did have, because of the use of the RPGs in Gaza, they did damage many of the tanks, and some need to be replaced or at least to be repaired. You need the parts for that. So the answer is yes, there is a shortage. There is a general shortage in the world. Even for our own troops, American troops, there appears to be a shortage. There are only two factories in America making ammunition. And now Israel will create its own industry and factories to produce. But, you know, like the JDAMs and things like that are sophisticated. It's not just something you can set up a mom-and-pop shop and start creating. So it is, I know members of Congress have raised the issue. I know that it's been negotiated between Israel and the United States publicly and privately. People who deny that they're holding up stuff, but from what I have seen directly from sources, it seems to be true and mostly delayed, not denied.
Wow. That is quite a concern. The ICC, they are going to be issuing arrest warrants for Bibi and for Gallant?
It's certainly moving in that direction. We're going to learn today what the ICC's decisions are. And there is a lot of concern because it's a biased group. The head of it now is and the members are biased. And it's true of the ICJ and the ICC. Netanyahu canceled a trip where he was supposed to go, I think, to Hungary and Slovakia. Two stops before coming to the United States, but because of fear of arrest.
Wow.
And it does hang over him, I know, and a number of others. Gallant and he are the only, I think Hetzia Levy is also a target. But once you start, it means that every soldier could be in danger. Everybody could, would be have to be restricted.
So the Hungarian government would enforce the ICC's arrest?
No, I don't believe that the Hungarian government would enforce it. I think Orban does not support it. He's come out against it. But I don't know. It was strange, but because of the Interpol, or maybe somebody else might exercise, or it doesn't have to be the government. You could have people do it.
Wow, interesting.
Officials.
No, I get that. I'm sure you saw the Mort Zuckerman stoppage of the $200 million commitment to Colombia. That's news and numbers that actually could make a difference, correct?
Well, as a member, an advisor to the foundation, I think it's a great decision. It's the right decision. It has had an impact. I think the leaders have cut their funding to the universities that have been unresponsive and that continue to allow anti-Semitism to rage, and we're going to be facing a difficult situation in the fall where these activities we know already are going to be stepped up and ramped up. Wait till you see what happens at the Democratic Convention where they are planning extreme elements. I think Milwaukee really prepared and limited access and ability for them to do anything. And the Republican Convention is not the major target. It's the Democratic Convention. They're using the model of 1968 when they disrupted the Democratic Convention. I think the dangers that lie ahead are more restrictions. And frankly, we're very disappointed that the Senate is not acting. There are four bills on anti-Semitism before the Congress, and everybody should write to Senator Schumer urging that they move ahead with this now, that at least some of these bills should be passed. We believe that majority, because you need a few Democrats to join the Republicans. It's really no excuse. You know, they're going to argue free speech and other things. They're afraid of backlash against it. Well, courage is the demand of the day. And it doesn't take courage to stand against hate and anti-Semitism. And it's raging in our country. Everybody knows it. Yep. Where we're beginning to even look at the mental health implications, which are beginning to show how this impacts people, young people as well, the fear, the concern, the incidents. And when you see that 96% of American Jews say that they know of or have experienced an anti-Semitic attack and fear it and don't do, the vast majority won't wear public symbols of their Jewish identity. This is a raging cancer, and we need to have every tool available. And passing these legislative initiatives will help a lot. It won't cure it, but it's essential now that we do much more to be vocal and to demand accountability with police. And so we know, by the way, now that the Chinese funding, the Iranian funding, the Qatari funding, in huge amounts of money that are going into organizing and supporting these activities, it's not going to be. And half of the people involved are not students. They're paid, hired for the event. They are often, coming from wing and communist groups and others. It's a very complicated thing, and we can do shows about it in the future, but we're uncovering stuff every day. There's, thank God, we're doing sophisticated work on it. But we need to mobilize our resources to make it a unified effort, not just have individual initiatives. We're building platforms where we hopefully can bring together all of the different elements. But everybody who's doing deeper research on the internet, monitoring it, is finding more and more intense relationships between foreign governments, between extreme elements, and the activities that we see manifest. This is not just student expression of deep concern. No idea where Gaza is. They have no idea what the issues are. They don't stand up for any of the other dozens of people in the world who are really suffering and being deliberately targeted. So this is manufactured and should be of great concern to everyone.
Finally, Malcolm, what do you know about this person described as a neo-Nazi charged in a plot to poison Jewish kids in New York by distributing poisonous candy?
And he has a Jewish-sounding name, too, on top of it. But thank God they caught him and that they were able to prevent this kind of an attack. But, you know, you don't know until we get all the information whether they're lone operatives, which is just some, unfortunately, mentally ill person. But thank God they prevented it. And that's, again, where human error can come. It could be that somebody would have just dismissed this as ridiculous and not have pursued it, but thank God they did, and they should be credited for when they do when law enforcement does capture somebody like this. But unfortunately, we have these kind of crazy threats single day all over the country. It's not just one place and one source, and it invites copycatting. And when you hear credible people saying that it's the Israel lobby that manufactured the threat from Iran, and so we're not taking it seriously, those people aren't, then we again miss the right signals and perhaps not prevent a tragedy that we could.
All right, understood. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll speak, please God, next week. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Yeah, have a good Shabbos. Be well.
Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, Friday morning broadcast, Erev Shabbos. If you missed any of our weekly update, check out the archive later on, NahumSiegel.com, or the NSN app. Both have robust archive sections.